Hi there. You're muted. You can go down and unmute yourself if you want.
Okay, hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Good.
So how you doing?
Oh, real good. Yeah, it's getting colder here in South Dakota.
Yeah, it's snowing here, so.
And we had a little bit of snow yesterday, and then there it didn't last long though.
There, can I? There,
Oh,
that's what I'm
wow.
doing
You
here.
got a lot more than we did. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm loving it. Oops, I better put this down.
Where do I go to get everybody on? Like, do I go to share a screen?
Oh, I think we're the only two here yet.
Oh, I didn't know how if that was good. That's the first time I've used my computer.
Ah.
I got a Mac, and I always used a laptop before, so
Ah, I should.
that's Sharon's birthday today, and she's
Well, happy
75.
birthday, Sharon. How's she doing?
Well, she went over to our daughter's house this morning, but only Gomney sent a message. So,
That's good. Yeah, he's gonna try to phone in, I think.
okay.
Let's see, I should. See if I can figure out how to do this.
You got some Norwegian music there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna do this, I think.
Yeah, I wanted to get on early to see if I could work it. So.
Ah.
Wow. A CD. I like that. Thank you.
Hi, Ann.
Good morning. I had to unmute. How are you doing?
Okay, let's see.
Thank you.
Oh, hello, everybody.
Hello.
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 Well, there are six of us here. So we got 3 minutes for everybody else to show up. Actually,
Seven. Brought a lot of good memories back.
Yeah, that was a good time. And we can do it again in 2014.
This is Daryl and Jackie. Can you see us and hear us?
I sure can.
Great.
Okay, we can't see anybody else, and I don't know how to fix it.
We have a bunch of unrelated pictures showing up.
I think if you go to, like, if you touch the bottom of the screen, maybe it'll pop up and let you do stuff.
Yeah. Share content. The host can share. Okay. Participants. So there's.
Oh, I should show you what it looks like up here. There.
Oh, wow.
It's like Christmas.
Wow.
Okay. Good. Hi, Lenore.
Hi. How are you doing, Anne?
Oh, I'm chugging along.
Okay.
Thank you so much for the great pictures, the slideshow. Wonderful. And the music added, it was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I enjoy doing it. So I enjoy doing lots of things. I just don't have enough time to do all the things I want to do or need to do. But we carry on.
You know, can I just, this is Barb Schmidt talking. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
So I'm on the phone because every time I do one of these Zoom meetings, it turns out that my internet kind of goes wonky and it just, I don't, suddenly it'll just slow down. I won't hear anything. So I decide this is my safe bet. But anyway, I just want to shout out, hello, Roger, Liz, Diane, Ray, Mel, Karen, Anne, I miss Helen, Daryl and Jackie, you guys, it's so good to see your faces. And I know there's other people, I think, that aren't showing that must have come in by without video. But I was just thrilled to see this list and go, wow, this is so cool.
That works a whole lot better than having to drive for a few hours. And especially, you know, people that would have to like fly in or something. It works pretty good.
Yeah.
So, and there's Mel over in Norway. Hello.
sorry. Hi. How is everyone?
We're good.
Great.
That doesn't look like Karen. That looks more like a Jason.
she's making coffee right now. So.
Is she going to give it to all of us?
Hey, it might take a while to get there, but sure.
Yeah.
Hey, Jason.
Hi.
Okay. Hi,
you all know I've got a new son-in-law, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Is he up to par?
He is, definitely.
Good. It's important to meet with mom's approval. Oh, I like the trolls. Very nice. Oh, aren't they cute?
Our gift from Highland Log. Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Too bad that wasn't there to put on your wedding cake.
Ah, well, I'm a Kranzkaka. Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess it's 10:31, so we'll call this thing to order. Is the agenda on everybody's screens?
No, we've got a bunch of pictures, including a Saturday Night Live thing and Brain Power.
Yeah.
Right. Me too.
It's the YouTube thing, I think.
Oh, okay.
The end of the YouTube.
Well, let me see if I can switch this.
Yeah. No. Okay.
Yeah. Done.
And do, because I thought whatever I put on my screen would get shared, so I'm trying to be careful. Let's see. Oh, I bet it's over here. Okay, are you seeing it now? Can you see it now?
Karen.
Gotta go down.
Oh, Mittens.
Hi, Mittens.
Hello, people. Okay, so anyway, the first thing is, I think hopefully you all got the agenda. I don't know why I can't. It says I'm screen sharing, but I don't guess I am.
Well, I think you are, but I think you're sharing still the internet where I think it's the website. It says Alm website, Minnesota is the tab on the top. There you go. Now we're seeing all the people.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
And then let me see if I can do this. Meeting controls. Where's my meeting controls? Well,
you might try to go back into share screen and select the screen that you want to share. If you moved it from your files over.
Let's see. First I gotta find pulling up Microsoft Teams. There we go. Well, now it's not letting me share the screen. So anyway, we'll just go with, I'll just look at it and hope for the best.
Maya?
Oh, yes. I wish I could show you the same beautiful view, but I'm closer to the lake. And so it's really foggy here. They're lucky who live up on top of the mountains, because this is really not as nice. But I'll show you in any case. This is, fog. also in Hadeland, but it differs a lot, the weather from high and low.
Yeah.
But we're very happy to be part of your conference, and it's nice to see your faces because we've been writing a lot for Brua previous years and emailing and stuff, and it's nice and a bit strange to like see you as actual people. We know there's a community. We know there's a big community, and then it's nice to see you. And I don't, Andrea, like this summer, it's been a bit strange because we often have a lot of American visitors to the museum, and this year it's been nothing.
Yeah.
So we're happy to answer your questions. We received a lot of questions beforehand. Some questions were about like contemporary life and some were more historical. So we've worked together with our historians and the archive to try to answer them as best as we can. And we can just start, and then doesn't have to be more formal than if you have any other questions or follow-up questions, or we don't like touch on the things that you were wondering about, like feel free to interrupt us.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that sound good? Everyone's muted, so yeah, but feel free to them. So I'm going to start with the contemporary questions, and then you, Andrea, you're going to follow up more with the historical questions.
Yeah, I guess I'll answer the one about climate change, but you were on about sports, and yeah, we can just go through them, I guess.
It's funny to see the questions that you asked too, because it gives us also a bit of an understanding of, I guess, how like different, which parts of the culture is different, and a lot of the things I guess we take for granted is something that we're made aware of when you ask the questions. So I don't see you now because I'm having my notes up on the computer, but the first question, would you like that I read the questions that we received just to like?
Sure.
Yeah. So the first one was about school and youth activities. I understand that the schools in Norway don't have sport teams and that young people who want to play sports are members of clubs. Is this true of any competitive sports? I'm wondering if this is true for things like speech and debate, orchestras, band and choir, and other extracurricular activities, or if schools themselves do support non-athletic activities. If the schools do have bands and orchestras, do the schools provide musical instruments for beginners as they get older? I'm guessing that there is a yearly charge to join a club. And tips to really good athletes. How old must children be when they join clubs? Is there recruiting by clubs to get the best people? And now I was notified that my internet connection is unstable. Could you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, good. So, I guess the biggest difference is that everything is organized outside of schools. Where you can specialize, you know, we have different schools, or high schools mainly, where you can specialize in either sports or in music or theater and a variety of different subjects. But for after school activities or extracurricular activities, everything is like nothing is organized at school. It still mostly remains public in the sense that the municipalities organize everything. So here in Hadeland, for instance, you have, it's called a Kulturskole, like a school of culture. And that's where everything is offered. Arts, theater, musical instruments, both individually and also bands, like they organize everything around it. Marching bands is a big thing here, especially in Hadeland, when it's a strong tradition for marching bands. And the fee is very low. So it's designed for everyone to participate. And for those families who are not able to, like if it's still too expensive, there are also ways to subsidize or receive a reduction. Because the main goal remains that everyone should be able to participate in everything and receive the same education also when it's not at school. For sports, it's a bit different. Sports is organized, it's still under the municipality, but it's organized in local sports clubs. And they receive substantial funding from the state in order to have like the equipment, whether it's like skiing arenas or football courts, everything. Like there's a lot of money in sports. Since we're working in a museum, we tend to think that there's too much money going to sports and a bit less to culture. but that's our opinion. In terms of, I'm sure you're familiar with the Norwegian concept of dugnad. It's the way of organizing things so that everyone participates, like parents or the caregivers of the kids all contribute with free work to raise money. So for all these clubs, especially with sports, the parents often do volunteer work to raise money for the club so that that way they can pay for trips and for uniforms or soccer shirts and all that stuff. I especially like your question about whether they recruit especially talented children or something like that. Because that question is kind of horrifying here. it's under no, like that, again, like everyone should be able to participate is both looking at the financial situation, but also that there shouldn't, like the after school activities are designed to get everyone engaged in what they're doing or give everyone a chance to compete or to participate and not to not to develop specific talents. I know that's even been criticized. It was a recent debate that a lot of people felt that the soccer teams were designed for the most talented players. But there's, if you have a different opinion, Andrea, but to my, like the way I see it, there's the main focus is not to develop talents, but to get everyone on board.
I guess you're talking now about the younger until they come to high school where they're pushed more when you see the talent clearer, I guess. But also I would like to add that I know in certain parts of Norway, maybe even here at Hadeland, I just moved to Hadeland a few months back, so I don't know that much about how sports is organized here, but I come from Oslo and I know that there are libraries where they you can also lend for free sports equipment. So that if you don't have the money for skis or snowboard, or they want to make it available so socioeconomic backgrounds shouldn't matter that much. And even there you can rent a prom dress or stuff, you know, for everyone to be able to participate socially. And so I like that a lot.
Yeah. There's an equivalent here in Hadeland too, where you can rent everything from skis to skates and like kayaks, everything you need. And it's being well used, so that's good. Scholarships are very rare. I know here locally, there's a bank foundation that have started doing that, which is a bit strange. It's 5 scholarship for younger people and it covers everything. It's like academic excellence, musical talents, everything, but that's something very novel, I would say. Anyway, you wouldn't really need a scholarship because schools are free and also activities afterwards are very reasonable.
Mm. Yeah. And here you also have a fighting club for boxing and martial arts and that kind of stuff. And I know some talents that are, you know, I don't know, that got a scholarship because he's around 20 and he needs to spend more time on training and less on working to earn money. So he got a scholarship. But
I went to university in New York. So I was also like a little bit exposed to the way it was organized at my university, where you had a lot of teams. And you don't have it. You don't have the same here. It's not the school's responsibility, and it's not something that the school engages in at all. But it still remains mostly public. There are some private activities as well, but mostly public.
Yeah.
Should I continue to the voting and election question, or do you have any follow-up on the youth and sports and?
Well, does someone, if you have a question or a comment or something, just go ahead and unmute yourself and yammer.
I was going to ask, what was the name you called of the Norwegian term for this, that, you know, everyone has a chance or whatever?
Dugnad. D-U-J-N-A-D. Dugnad. It's kind of a concept that we very often explain to people from different countries because it's quite a strong spirit of dugnad in our country. And that comes to anything from helping out in your neighborhood to sports to, yeah.
It was voted because we had, it was a, you know, we have a national bird and we have a national dish and we have a national this and that. So we wanted a national word, and I dugnad was elected the national word. So it's officially also the national word. Sometimes it's, I don't know. I remember when I was a kid, I used to play handball and my mother had to clean toilet because, you know, like the parents have to step up and do this dugnad to earn money for the handball club. And she had to clean portaloos at a, you know, the big parties you have when you graduate.
Yeah.
That tend to escalate a bit over here. So she had to clean those at 3 a.m. at night. So she was not very excited about the dugnad then, but still remains the way it's organized. Yeah.
I was also thinking about kind of sports and activities that I don't know if we define as sports, but it still is, I guess, like, you know, hiking in the forest, fishing, being outdoor, like just walking every weekend with your family, canoeing, those kind of activities that are, you know, the freedom to roam in nature here is quite strong as well. So people go out a lot and are very active without defining it, I guess, as a sport. And I think then sadly more and more focus is on, you know, looking cool and having the right branded jacket. But I think it's a lot of like people also fighting against that. So you should be able to wear whatever you want to do that. To include everyone.
I like the way it's organized. I appreciate I appreciate the structure for being able to offer high quality education in fine arts and in painting and theater and like every range of activity to everyone. I think that's
John,
that's
you had a comment?
Yeah.
Yeah, is this just a free-for-all? We can ask anything?
Pretty much a free-for-all. We have some questions that were sent in, but this topic of youth and sports and whatever it is, that thing, this would be the time to ask those questions,
I have several questions, but I want to wait my turn. Have you addressed everybody who was sent in?
No.
Oh, no, not at all. I can continue with the voting and election. That was the second question. Although it seems more interesting to ask you about voting and election these days, but we'll we'll talk about Norway. So the question was, what percent of eligible voters vote in Norway? What are the major parties and what is their philosophy or basic message? And which parties are the biggest? So all the numbers that are here are based on the SSB, the National Statistic Bureau of National Statistics. And for the local, you know, we have every fourth year, we have a national election for the parliament. And every fourth year, we have a local election for the municipality. And for the local election, the percentage was 64 at the latest election. It's been pretty stable. And for the national election, it's a bit higher. So it's 78%. There's going to be a new election next year, and that's the parliamentary election.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of political parties, and there's been one new party just last week. So I didn't include all the parties because there's a lot of specific parties that are for, you know, interest groups or particular demographics. Like there's a retirement party, there's a big variety, but I included the parties that are currently in the parliament, represented in the parliament. The biggest party by far, historically and still, is the Labour Party. And they have a social democratic ideology at the base. They've been changing. There is a big debate in Europe now about the future of the Labour parties because they, in Norway, as you may know, like the Labour Party was the one party that more or less ran the country for a very long period of time alone. And this has started to change. Now we've had, for the, well, as long as I can remember, we've had coalition governments with several smaller parties. And now the Labour Party have 49 MPs, which is 27% of the total total vote. The second party is the Conservative Party. It's a liberal conservative party. And I think, and to compare it to American politics, our conservative party would be more like the Democrats, I think. Although the Democratic Party is changing too, I guess. But they are currently the one holding the prime minister, and they have 25% of the total vote. Mm-hmm. They've had the prime minister now for, oh, you have to help me, Andrea. It's been a two terms or two governments with a with her as the prime minister. Then the third party is the third largest party is the called the Progress Party. That's a national conservative, more right-wing party. They have 15% of the vote. It's a fairly new party. Both the Conservative Party and the Labour Party are traditional old parties. And then you have parties that came in the 80s and the 70s and the 90s. A lot after the Second World War. And this party is more, I guess, like the Republican Party by comparison, conservative on some aspects, but also liberal on some aspects. They were in government, and the platform for the government was signed in Hadeland. So the current government program has been carries the name of Granavolden that Andrea just showed you.
Where I'm sitting right now, actually. Yeah.
So we've seen a high increase in interest in and knowledge about our region as a result of that government platform, because they often go to a hotel a bit outside also to fight it out and try to agree. Then it's the center party, which I found it's a fascinating word to find like what their ideology is. It's described as Nordic aggregarianism, meaning that, I don't know if you have that in the States, but it's a farmers party mm-hmm. in popular terms. It was founded by farmers, and it's a party that it's a center party leaning sometimes towards the left, sometimes towards the right. They can go both ways, but their main focus is to, it's a protectionistic party because they work to increase Norwegian produce and farmers and local, and also like the districts, they're anti-urbanization party. They have 10% of the votes and they're doing very well. So I think for the next election, they're gonna increase. Then there's the Socialist Party. That was also a party that came after the war. It's a left-wing Democratic Socialist Party with 6% of the votes by now. They've gone down a bit because they've received more competition on the left. But they're still there. Then there's after them again, there's a party called the Liberals, which is a classic liberal party, also one of the oldest parties in Norway, but they've gone from being the biggest party to now being 4%.
Oh.
And falling. It's interesting when you see how, you know, like the constellations change in power and geography, how the different more traditional parties struggle often, like the Labour Party, the Liberals, they struggle a bit to find their new profile in the current society, I guess, or in the current topics. But you see similar patterns and similar challenges in all these parties, sister parties in Europe. And then finally, no, not finally, there's three more. There's the Christian Democratic Party, which is center, and they've been going center right. So they're in the current government with 4%. And then there's the Green Party, which is the youngest of all these parties. It's also the center left party, and they have 3%, one MP. And then finally, you have the red, the Marxist Party, which also has one representative and 2% of the votes. Yeah. That's the rough outline of this. It's a lot. It's a lot of parties. And the interesting thing is that all these coalition governments, they become quite unstable because, you know, there's pros and cons, I guess. But now there's the Conservative Party, which is the second biggest, followed with by two other very small parties that now have like between 3%, 4%, and 5% of the votes. So it becomes a lot of fight for symbolic cases to keep them in government. And, you know, it's... it makes for a more dynamic, but also more competitive political debate.
Mm.
So like we have, for instance, Democrats, and there are very conservative Democrats and very liberal Democrats, and they're all in one party. If we were in Norway, they would probably be different parties.
There would probably be five. Yeah. Looking at the list I have, I'm guessing to like, if I were to like put them with the Democrats or the Republicans, I guess, yeah, there would be like maybe three of them on the Republican side and the rest I think would lean to the Democratic Party. Yes. Yeah.
I guess that's why we call it left and right in a sense. Yeah. That comes are kind of two and then central. So we have kind of three. Yeah, and you have far right, far left, like that's our way of defining the parties. Mm. But the party that's called left could be on the right side of the spectrum. So because it changed.
And I think, and adding to this, I think also that the things, I think everything, all the parties tend to be a little bit more to the left than the American parties. So
yeah, I don't think
the Labour Party in America and in Norway would probably be a bit different.
Yeah. Even the very conservative here would be quite liberal, I guess, in the US, don't you think? Yeah.
So that was.
If you go back 40 years, the Republican Party was probably more Democrat than Republican at the time because they like supported Social Security and all the kind of basic social. Safety net kinds of things that Republicans no longer support.
Yeah, and that's what you see here also with the Labour Party in Norway going further to the right. You see all these other parties further to the left emerging, like the Green and the Communists and the, like different shades of left parties. To kind of, you know, fill the role that the Labour Party used to have in the post-war decades.
Anyone have any comments or thoughts?
Yeah, about I have a question. How many total seats are there in the parliament?
Oh, good question. I'll have to, I just took the, I didn't summarize them, but that should be 1 second away. 169.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I had a real tough time figuring out the difference between labor, socialists, and liberals. Is it just sort of geographic kind of?
No. Well, there's historical things. The liberals was, I think, the first party that was founded in Norway. They define themselves as a centrist party. It's from the 80-something. They define themselves as a centrist party, meaning that they're not as... they're for privatization to a much larger extent, for instance, than the Labour Party. The Labour Party still tends to be more oriented towards a strong state on employment, on union issues, on public services of all forms and shades. So I guess in value questions, they tend to agree more, like in terms of abortion, immigration, they agree, but it's more the view on the state and the role of government where they differ. And then the Labour Party was founded in the 1920s, I believe, and the Socialist Party, they were formed as a protest after the World War II, because there were a division within the Labour Party where the Labour Party starting going more towards the right. Well, and then there was a block of the Labour Party that broke away and formed the Socialist Party to remain more true to what they
believe was the core of the working class issues. Yeah. I don't know if that helped, but so there are historical and real differences. Yeah.
I have a question. is Norway, do you see a kind of development of a more nationalistic party like we have in the US and in France, Germany, some other countries are seeing kind of a, you know, in response to immigration or what have you?
Kind EU.
Of, yeah, just, well, yeah. More nationalistic kind of anti-immigration party. Do you have that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the party called the Progress Party that I think now is the fourth largest party that was actually part of this government, that they left the government after a while because they preferred to be a protest party, but they were still part of the founding the documents that are the government policies for this current government. And they are, they used to be tiny when they were formed in the 70s, and opposition to taxes and opposition to government regulations in general. And they have increasingly through the 80s and 90s, and especially latest years, become more and more an anti-immigration or very strict on immigration party. And that's where they get most of their voters. And they've grown significantly. I don't know how much in percentage, but when I was young, they were a small party not to be reckoned with. And now they've made government and they are 15%, I think, at the last election. And the other interesting thing with that is that they're also pushing the other parties to adapt, you know, like they're kind of shifting the room for how we talk about immigration. When they're being the extreme party, you can also see that the other more majority parties are starting to like drift a bit that way because it becomes such a hot topic, I guess. And yeah. They're defining themselves as a right wing, not extreme right. Like in Sweden and France, you have Le Pen and like other parties that more strongly define their parties as anti-immigration or extreme right, and they don't. They still remain far right or yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Anything else?
Limits for members of parliament?
Pardon?
Do they have term limits?
Like no.
They can only serve a few terms or they
no.
can serve forever like they can here?
And some do, yeah. No. That's the local, because they're nominated from their different districts and then it's a local decision who gets to be the first nominee or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so I'll just look what the next question was.
May I ask one more?
Absolutely.
How many of the 169 are women?
Oh, good question. Let's see. It's 40%, 69. 69 of them are women, so 100 of them are men. Yeah. The good thing is that we have a female prime minister, and up until recently, Minister of Finance was also a woman, and the foreign minister is a woman. So that's, yeah. Even if we're not at 50 in the parliament, it's still a female dominated government, which is, I guess we're supposed to be not saying our opinion since we're representing the museum, but I still appreciate that. If I can remove my museum hat. Yep.
Yeah, take it.
We'll never tell.
No. I think they know too. Yeah. We've kind of removed ourselves from the thought that museums are supposed to appear as neutral, but that's a different debate. Yeah. So the next question I received was buying things in Sweden, which is a very funny question.
Yeah.
The question was, I have heard that people buy a lot of things in Sweden that are cheaper. Is this true? And what do they buy? Do people go to any other countries specifically to buy things? Mm-hmm. Did the virus change that? And the short answer is yes. It was funny because when I received your question, I went in to look at the statistics a bit, because the phenomenon of Norwegians traveling to Sweden to do groceries is very well known and very widespread.
We have a word for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like redneck shopping is that, I guess, it translates to that. But it's not considered to be a sophisticated activity. Because the products that people go to buy are, I guess that's why it's not considered sophisticated, beer. Is that they buy soda, tobacco, alcohol, and meat.
And candy.
And candy, because it's cheaper. So I looked at the numbers, and Sweden alone accounts for 88% of the foreign shopping done from Norway. And I just looked at the numbers for September last year. It was 2 million. So in the States, you would have to divide that by 9 or 10 now, I guess, in 1 month in grocery shopping in Sweden. And so this is a huge source of income for Sweden. Like, it's a substantial part of the Swedish economy, especially along the borders. And you see, like, along the borders, there are cities and shopping centers that have emerged just because of this this trend or phenomenon. And now that Corona hit, it has had very hard consequences on Sweden, and in reverse, very positive effects for the Norwegian economy. So this is a very hot political topic. It's like, what do we do with this grocery shopping in Sweden? And since, like I said, like, it's like tobacco and alcohol and sugar, which are products that are heavily text in Norway, and you know, we have the wine monopoly, so you can only buy liquor and wine in the state-run monopoly. There, you know, whether should we lower the prices in Norway to prevent people from going to Sweden, or should we increase the taxes for people going to Sweden? That's, I guess, the simple. That's where the disagreement is. And there you have the left-right. The left wants to prevent shopping in Sweden, and the right wants to make these same products cheaper and more affordable in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's...
A similar situation in Washington State. We're very close to British Columbia. And we have big billboards, and we encourage the Canadians to come down and buy everything they can. right now, borders closed because of COVID, but they do come in droves. And the cities closest to the border, it's anywhere from 25 to 30% of their economy.
Yeah, and you saw now that as soon as the border, or they tried opening it, it's closed now. The border to Sweden is closed now, but they tried to open it this summer. And people were waiting, like, there were news teams there, and there were lines around the block for people getting ready to go grocery shopping in Sweden again. So, yeah, that's definitely something that's happening. Yeah.
Any other thoughts? Nope. Okay.
There was it was another question about travel, which is kind of connected to Sweden in a sense. But the question was that it seems like a lot of Norwegians go to Spain and other countries for vacations. I suppose that it's like here in the US, where we go to Texas, Arizona, and Florida, and sometimes Mexico, especially in the winter, to get away from the cold weather. What are the favorite places that Norwegians like to go, and why do they go there? And then there were some questions about, like, how we go on vacation, if everyone goes at the same time, and what happens to the grocery stores and the people that work there, and hospitals and policemen and other important jobs? Does the Folk Museum close for these holidays? And if you can't go on vacation with everyone else, do these people get to pick when they take their vacation? And do they get extra paid working when everyone else is on vacation? So I also looked at the because, you know, like, we also have our prejudices living here, or what we think is the most common destination. So I went in and checked, and our favorite destination is Sweden by far, also. Not just for grocery shopping, but also as a holiday destination. And then I think just in general, Norwegians travel a lot, which has been weird this year because travel has exploded. And from January until April last year, we did 6.2 million travels just in those 4 months. And I don't know how many million people live in Norway now. It's around five or maybe towards six. So that means that, you know, we travel a great deal, and it's rapidly increasing with cheaper air travels, I guess, and increased wealth. So it was 20% increase in travel just from the previous year. And so after Sweden, it's Spain, like the question asked. That's the second popular destination. Then UK, Denmark, Germany, France, Greece, Italy, and Croatia, and like the Mediterranean countries. So we talked a bit at work about like how, like, you know, what types of travel are these. And I think the Spain travel, the Mediterranean travel, the traveling for warmer weather is often also like a very organized form of travel. Like you have these deals where you like you book a package and you get the plane and you get the hotel, and at the hotel everything is included, and it's, you know, transportation to and from. So that's a very popular form of travel. But then you also have you're going to talk about climate change afterwards, Andrea. So this is considered problematic. The big city weekends, which is, I guess, something in Europe when you're so close to, you know, Barcelona, Paris, London, and with the plane tickets being fairly cheap, you can, you know, take an oval weekend, as we call it. That means like Thursday to Monday, and go shopping in London or do Christmas shopping in Barcelona, which is a bit terrifying. But that's also a pretty big segment of traveling. There's weekend trips to New York, which is, you know, it's a bit disconcerting, I think. There's also the domestic travel, which was not maybe part of the question, but I think the summer is mainly the season for traveling abroad, but also like the fall break and when it starts to get colder. But for Easter and Christmas, people tend to stay here and go to the cabin. So the cabin still remains a dear travel destination for those who have a cabin, which a lot of people do in Holland, at least. And then green tourism is on the rise.
You also have this cabin network, which is an association that has several hundreds of cabins around Norway. You can be a member of this trekking association and hike from cabin to cabin. So you don't have to necessarily own your own cabin to have cabin holidays, I would say, which is really unique, I think.
If you're ever traveling to Norway, you should really check that out. It's an amazing offer. And some of the cabins are with restaurants and staffed, and some you just get a key and there's still like food in the pantry, so you can just, you know, pay for what you use. So part of the question was also on how the vacation is organized. And there is still a thing called fellesferien, which like the shared vacation, which is typically from the school vacation from the end of June until the end of July. And it's not that everything is closed. So all the important, the crucial jobs like police and hospital and healthcare and all those services are still operating, but you know, the parliament takes a break, all public services tend to slow down. So it's, you know, there's a lot less emails. It's a beautiful time to work, actually, because there's like nothing going on. But it's still not, the country doesn't shut down. So the museum and tourism are very much active during that part of the year for obvious reasons. And you don't get paid extra because you work when others are on vacation. It's more that, like at our museum, we tend to hire a lot of students that work as guides in the summer. So that's more the season where you see students and people in the tourist industry working a lot while others go on vacation. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you get more paid if you work on holidays during like Christmas time and
Yeah. If you're then, for instance, a nurse and you work on Christmas Eve, you get more than double, and also in the evening you get 133% more paid, so more than double wage in those days, and New Year's Eve and 17th of May, yeah, those days are, we call them red days, so they are like you get more income.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, what's next?
So yeah, we're over to Andrea. And I was going to, because I have two kids that are going to bed in 5 minutes. So I was going to propose that if you take over with a historical question on the climate change, and I'll go put the screaming kids to bed. I can hear them.
Yeah. Have a good night.
Yeah, making a lot of noise downstairs. Thank you so much. It was really nice to see you, and I hope we'll see you in Hadeland next year. If we're optimistic.
2014. We'll be back. The Hadelandbach will be back in 2014.
Oh, yeah? Okay, yeah. Perfect. I know there was a big delegation planning to go to Dokka, our other museum in Lund, this year. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was the Lundingslag, different big delag. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to see you and have a good day.
Well, you too.
Bye.
Kiss your kids for us.
I will, if I'm able to. Yeah.
See you Monday.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah, so I guess the next question was about climate change. And it was, is the change in the climate making a difference in Norway? And what are the worries that everybody, everyday Norwegians talk about for the future from the changing climate? So yeah, it's a big question. The short answer is yes. The climate is changing here as well. And we see that, I guess, the most radical changes would be in the Arctic regions, the tundra and the Svalbard Islands in the Arctic, for instance, because the temperatures are higher there than before, and we see more rain, higher levels of water in, you know, the rivers, more avalanches, and also the tree line, because the higher you go, then there are less trees in the mountains, but the tree line is coming, going higher up. So new shrubs, new types of trees, and also new types of animals and plants are growing higher into the mountain regions. So for instance, species that didn't before thrive in certain mountain regions now are starting to thrive there. I wrote I did a study on the Arctic fox when I did my master's degree. So the Arctic fox in Norway is an endangered species. And I guess that fox is kind of experiencing a lot of what I'm just describing, because it's the red foxes and they are coming closer to the regions where the Arctic foxes are thriving, and these are enemy species. So they're disturbing the Arctic foxes in their reproduction, for instance. So that we see because of warmer climate. And also in Norway, we can grow food longer now because it's warmer here. And we also see that birds that used to come, because birds leave in winter here, and when they come back, they come a bit earlier in spring. So I guess in Norway, we expect changes to all our major ecosystems in the coming years, the oceans, the coast, freshwater, wetlands, open lands, forests, mountains. We expect the rising temperatures to continue around 4 to 5 degrees, and which has catastrophic consequences for the Arctic region specifically, but also Norway in general, and I guess the rest of the world, as because we don't live in vacuums. So yeah, in the north of Norway, you see more acidic oceans, and also there are a lot more species that we would call alien species, or species that aren't
we haven't seen in our ecosystems before that really thrive now. That, you know, we have a kind of crab called snow crab, which is coming from Russia and then going towards the whole coast of Norway, that is quite aggressive and competitive to the local types of crabs. They are taking a bit over the coast and also certain types of plants. So I guess if Norwegians are worrying about, or what Norwegians are worrying about climate change, I guess we are very much linked to the international discussions on that with activists around the world, with climate activists, but anything from plastic, microplastic in the oceans to the Arctic fox dying out, or I would say that are stuff that Norwegians worry about, but also just, you know, recycling. These are the things that people try doing by, like, the counties are having recycle systems. And so, yeah, I guess that was, because the next question connected to climate change, I would say, is you have, was about, I have heard that Norway wants only electric cars in the future. So this is very much connected to a solution that our government is doing. So somebody says, is this true? And how is the government working to make this happen? And yes, it's true that Norway wants only electric cars in the future. The goal is in 2025 to have 100% electric cars here. And right now, I think the amount of cars that are being sold, looked it up. So 15th of December last year, 43% of all the sold cars in Norway were electric. And the goal is, as I said, 100% by 2025. So that, as the government has said, is their goal. So Norwegian government looks at themselves as a pioneer when it comes to giving incentives for people to buy electric cars when they have to renew their car. And let me see here. So different kinds of perks have been given to people to buy electric car. For instance, you could drive, when you have an electric car, you can drive also in the taxi lane and the public transportation lane. There's a lot of fees you don't have to pay when you buy a car, when you renew different certifications and like registering it or owning it, there are less things you have to pay and on taxes. You have a lot of places free parking if you drive an electrical car, and for instance, if you drive a car and you go onto a ferry, you don't have to pay for your car, stuff like that. And they're working on expanding the charging stations all around the country to make it more lucrative, because still a lot of people that live outside of Oslo or the big cities, they have like what we call, what do we call it again? Like an anxiety to leave the city where there are no charging stations. So we have a term for it. It's called rekkeviddeangst, which is like the anxiety of leaving the charging places. Some people also have hybrid cars, of course, so they can use both. And for instance, a lot of people, when they go to their cabins, they will use a non-electrical car. Or in the city of Oslo, for instance, you have car sharing collectives, so people could borrow or you pay a certain amount of fee for 1 year and you can borrow a car with fuel. But let me see here, because now there's a lot of electrical cars in Norway, we also see that the change in incentives is going a little bit down, because you don't want the public transportation line to be full of cars so that public transportation can't get through. So little by little now they're slowing down on the incentives, because it's kind of going by itself more now. So I guess that's, I mean, the city councillor, she in Oslo, capital city, is from the Green Party. So she's been very clear on a lot of these environmental focus, and she wants, like we have in Oslo, a self-driven bus. So they're testing out a lot of new technology, also run on electricity, and trying to be like the, I think Oslo was a few years back announced to be the green capital of Europe or something like that. So yeah, they don't want to have too much pollution, and it's also connected to concerns on the future of our planet, really. Yeah. And for our kids. I don't know if you have any more questions on climate change and cars or in general that I'm more than willing to answer.
I think we're good.
Yep. Okay. And then we have the historical questions. Let me see here. So there was a question about orphans in 1820 to 1840. What was it like for orphans in Hadeland around 1820 to 1840? My great-grandfather was orphaned at the age of 2. I suspect he was raised in the family of his stepsisters or other near relatives. Would there be an official transfer of guardianship of orphans administered through the church or government? So we have our historian who has looked into this. So I'm gonna translate a bit of what she found. So she writes that in around 1820s, most of the counties had what you would call taking care of poor people. That's fattigomsorg is the word. That's what it was called. And that was mainly taking care of people who couldn't take care of themselves, which were then old or with a variation in function, or orphan kids. And most of these people could still manage in some way or another, for instance, with help from relatives, friends, or neighbors. So the public poverty authorities, so to speak, or they were like the last resort. And those that got support financially because they were poor, they had a very low status. She says there that we can see that orphaned kids and to a big degree go to relatives or neighbors. And this we can see has a long tradition in Norway, at least back to all the way back to the Middle Ages and Viking ages. So in some cases, more siblings could come to the same place, for instance, to grandparents. And other times you can see that siblings were split up in different places. In some rare cases, orphan kids were taken care of by what I was calling the fattigförsörjelsen is kind of the people that take care of poor people. And then they would be put away to a family that got paid to have them or that kid or the siblings who could live there until they got old enough to be confirmation. But the payment for each kid was very low. So it's often known that they kept some kind of auction, but an auction that is opposite of paying a lot. So people would offer the lowest price, those would get the kid. And so that it was the cheapest for the authorities to pay. So that's the answer that our archivist put up and or answered on the orphans in the 1820s to 40s. And then there was a question about childhood epidemics in the 1850s and 1860s. So the question is as follows. A number of my grandfather's young siblings died in a cluster in the late 1850s or early 1960s. What were the notable childhood epidemics during this period in Hadeland? I've seen references to measles, scarlet fever, and plague. Which are the most likely? So our archivist said that generally in Norway, cholera outbreaks were quite usual from 1832 till 1870s. In 1850 and 1860s, you can see, especially in Christiania, now Oslo, there were epidemics of cholera outbreaks. And then in the decades until the 1900s, the epidemic diseases were a different variation of diarrhea, measles, scarlet fever and typhoid fever. So they were called, by people here, they were called the children killers, so to speak. And they represented the biggest health problems here in Hadeland as well. The mortality rate of kids or children dying in Hadeland in the 50s and 60s of the 1800s, the 1850s and 1860s, were about 10 to 15%. And the 1700s and 1800s, you can see some years there were more peaks in crisis where the deadliness were extra high. And then you can see that Hadeland had big breaks out of diseases and epidemics. And besides these crisis years, you could see diseases that were extra contagious, these children killers, as they were called. In the church books, it wasn't common at the time to write down the reason why these kids died. So she's also writing that studies shows that
you muted yourself. I think you muted yourself. There you go.
You can hear me now. Was it a long time I muted myself or? No, sorry.
About 10 seconds.
Okay. So you can see examples on mass graves and family graves where more siblings at the same day were buried. So examples of such diseases. There are examples of some diseases that are being put into the church books for Hadeland in the 1800s, and those are measles and certain kinds of diarrhea that caused bleeding internally. It's called mortality rate for kids, where it was 1.5 times more kids than the year before dying, which was only mostly kids being hit by that. So that's what the archivist wrote on child mortality on that question. And then you have emigration. A question about emigration. Was there a formal process people had to go through when they decided to emigrate to America? And what steps did they have to take? And what was the usual way that worked for them? And she says it was very little formality around what had to be organized when you emigrated to America. So until 1860s, everybody going to America that was traveling from one geographic administrative area. We call it Prestiel. It's like the area within the Church of Norway. So until the 1860s, people had to bring a certificate that was for traveling that the priest wrote, the priest or the sheriff. And those that were going out of the country had to have a passport, which was written by the police. And then that was also being filled into a little protocol. And then in 1860s, this the demand for having a passport to travel both within the country and to come into Norway, that was abolished. So you didn't have to have such a passport anymore. From 1860. She writes here that quite a lot of people went to the priest and told the priest that they were moving, but not everyone. And then they wrote down the name, where they lived and where they were going to go. And that was written down in the church book. So for instance, an example would be Ole Hansen, Grinakereie, that would be the name. And then that he was a tenant farmer, for instance, Husmann. And then they would say to America. So that would be how it would written down in the church book. And she says the reason why they would go to the priest was often to get a certificate or a diploma. Often it was the proof whether they were baptized or had a confirmation. Because in America, if you didn't have the proof that you were baptized, you couldn't get in confirmation. Or if you didn't have a paper, you were confirmed, you might not be able to marry. So it was important to have these certifications with you. Here it says also that in 1867, the master of the police master, or the leader of the police, led a protocol of emigration. So before people traveled from Norway, they the names of the people, also the boat they traveled with, and how much the ticket costs, and whether it was paid in advance or not, whether, for instance, a relative from America had paid for it or not, and how much money they brought with them, and the place they were going to. All of these things were written down in this protocol. And since the emigration increased in 1860s and beyond, it was usual that they bought a ticket from an agent, so a travel company. And these travel companies were specializing on selling travels to America. And by buying a ticket, what was included was most likely train transport and staying over in England. A safety that they took care of the luggage safely from where they went from Norway all the way to being shipped off in America or in American ground. And some travel companies made sure that they also received the traveler when they arrived in America itself. And they would, for instance, bring them to take the right train and make sure that they had all their train tickets and boat tickets and other things they needed to get also from the harbor into the country. So there was this law of emigration law, 22nd of May, 1869. And then an additional law within this emigration law, the name is 5th of June 1897, where it says that the police should control the traveling by emigrants to other parts of the world. So in Norway, that was important because they wanted a written contract between the agent and the person traveling outside or to America. That had to be signed by the sheriff. And the reason why they had such a control was to avoid that people emigrated if they were wanted by the by the government. For instance, if they still had some things they had to pay for, or if they had to go to the military or other reasons. So yeah, those were the answers on the historical questions.
Okay. John, did you have your, we're ready for your questions now, I guess.
Yeah, we've been going a couple hours, so just a quick reaction. I have a cousin in Yaren, and I used to read the Hodland Today articles. One of our friends there was concerned about all the consolidation going on among municipalities and of course, the county consolidations. Has it really affected anybody's life, those things?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I just moved here a few months back, and this whole county now is a very big county because of the consolidation with so many other counties. So, I mean, there's a lot of jokes being made about it, and I think also some people that find it hard to adjust to it by names and identities and that sort of things. I'm not sure if I would be the right person to answer it on behalf of the people from here. So I can maybe discuss it with my colleagues as well, and we can write you an email more because it would be also my opinion on just living here a few months.
Yeah,
that's
strange because I can speak for all 7.5 million people in the state of Washington. I don't understand that.
Anyway, more careful.
My people are from Grand Municipality, and so they were concerned about some other local towns that were all now going to have to answer to the political leaders in Grand and lost their local elected officials, if you will. So, but we can talk about that another time, or you can send me an email, whatever.
I think a lot of people find themselves a little bit lost in this massive county we now have. Or do you call it the county or municipality? Well, Innlandet is a massive part of Norway that Gran now is part of. And, you know, it's like cities that have never been connected before are all of a sudden underneath the same branch. So, yeah, but that's, I mean, in all over Norway now, people have to adjust to those consolidations, also in Oslo and Viken and several of these new ways of organizing the country. I think that people will adjust little by little. Like the name Hadeland itself, when I moved here, I found it difficult to understand what is Hadeland and what is not Hadeland, because it's spread now over two different counties or two municipalities, and just for me deciding where to live and where people were and train tickets, all of that was difficult to maneuver around, but we will get used to it.
Okay, well, thank you so much for taking all the time to find the answers to these questions and the time you spent with us. And
yeah, nice, you're welcome.
To see your face. And
yeah, you too.
And I guess this is a plus on one of the few pluses maybe on coronavirus, is that it offered an opportunity for us to do this. So
yeah,
thank you very much.
No, thank you. It was.
Tusen takk.
Yeah, bare hyggelig. I see behind you there, you have it in Norwegian, this
bond,
picture. Prayer. That's nice. and I wish you, I don't know what time it is over there, but...
It's 12:20 in Minnesota. It's probably 10:20 where John Halvorsen is.
Yeah.
And 1:20 on the East Coast. So,
well, here it's 7:30 or 7:20 in the evening. So I'm gonna have dinner now.
Well, I hope so, and have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Have a good day and weekend.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
This is a wonderful program. Thank you so much for a wonderful program.
Yes. Take care.
Thank you.
Yes. Bye, Mel.
Bye-bye.
I'm not throwing you out. I just saw it. Have a good night.
Thank you.
And I would much rather have the flowers than the snow. It's still coming down here, so.
Yeah.
Oof. Anyway, thank you all for being here. Thank you all for participating. And I'll be interested in knowing if we should do it this way again. It is kind of nice because people around the country can be here, and it's mm-hmm. not just local.
Yes, people. Right.
So,
yeah, obviously, I like it.
I bet you do.
You need to see people all over, you know, the country. Yes.
And yeah. Know,
nice to see faces and real people and hear them talk. And yeah, very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Format, and I hope that we could loop in people actually in Norway. That's really neat.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, that's terrific. That was, really that was terrific.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, good. So anyway, you all have a great day. Oh, I should say, because I did get a message about it, because I put it on Facebook. I don't know why. Monday night, I was sitting watching TV and my foot was asleep and I didn't think anything of it. But I was still asleep on Tuesday morning, so I decided I should probably go see why. And it turns out I had a stroke. Basically,
oh my goodness.
It didn't affect my brain anymore. I mean, my brain's a mess anyway. But basically, it just feels like my left arm and my left hand and my left leg and my left foot are kind of asleep. I had a very, very big stroke back in 1996. So I've been here and done that before. So I'm not really any the worse for wear. I just have to get used to whatever this is. But that's the way it goes. So that's it. You know, I'm okay. I'm not walking stairs for a while till I figure this out.
Yeah. So, I already hear that.
We wish anyway. You well. Mm-hmm. We wish you well, Anne.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
I wish you well. Wish you well.
But it's not bad. So, you know. I got an email from saying, are you still going to be able to be the editor of the Brewer? And, you know, I can probably do that. So it goes, it's good. So anyway, you all have great days and we will maybe see you again in a year or maybe this spring or, you know, mm-hmm. if this is something that, you know, we could do like on a quarterly basis or something, if that would be something it's easy and cheap, so you know.
I like it.
I think it worked very well.
It did.
Yeah.
So yes. And, you know, we'll even probably get better at some of the mechanics of it. So we'll give that some thought and see what we can do. And that would be something that we can do on the board now, since he's a board member, he can weigh in on what we should do with this virtual stuff.
Mm-hmm. Anne, is that Trixie sitting quietly behind you?
Yes, that's Trixie sitting quietly behind me. Quiet for a change.
Is that a cat or a dog?
It's a dog. It's a black lab.
Oh.
Norwegian or English?
Huh?
Is it answer to English or Norwegian?
It knows Ufta. but she's an all-American dog. So bye all.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye, Mel. This time for sure. Bye, Dick.
Bye now. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.